We're doing the In Yaakov, and we're holding Daf Yud in the Talmud, which is Gimel Amud Beis in the standard editions of the In Yaakov. We'll start again with Amar Rav Bar Machsi, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guya, Amar Rav. We're in the process of quoting many quotes from this series, Rav Bar Machsi in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guya, in the name of Rav. Hanoten Matanar Chavot Tzich Leduo, if someone gives a gift to his friend, not charity, but a gift, so then you should let him know, Shneimal, as the verse is, Radat Kani Hashem Kadishchem, God says, I want you to know that I am Hashem who gives you holiness. Tanya Namiyachi, we have a braisa supporting this concept. The verse says, Radat Kani Hashem Kadishchem, Hashem says, I want you to know that I am Hashem who gives you holiness. Amala HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. God said to Moshe, Matanat Vayishli Bevit Kenazai, have a good gift in my treasury, in my storage, my secret storage houses. V'Shabbat Shema, and its name is Shabbos. You hear? It has a name. Shabbos isn't just an act, it has a name. Shabbos is personified throughout Tanakh and the Midrashim, right? The first day that Adam lived, he walked into Shabbos, right? Adam was created Friday afternoon. His first full day was Shabbos. It says he was judged coming into Shabbos. He was supposed to die on Shabbos. And Shabbos got up and started making defense claims on behalf of Adam. So Shabbos is personified. Throughout the Midrashim, we find that Shabbos has a say. Shabbos says, every day of the week has a pair. What about me? Why am I alone? God says, Israel is your pair. So Shabbos is personified. So Hashem says, I have a good gift. Her name is Shabbos. Bani mevakesh litena liYisrael. But I want to give it to Israel. Lech v'odiyem. Go tell him. Mikan. Okay, yes.
So what does that mean, the concept of, because obviously it's not literal, that the concept of days of the week having sibugim. So what does that mean, that for a day of the week, like, oh, we have Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, oh, that's a pair, or, and then Am Yisrael, which is not, it's interesting, because days of the week are paired with days of the week, and then Shabbos is paired not with another day of the week, but with the nation, with the people. So what does this whole thing mean to be for days of the week to have Zivugim?
That's a good question, but it's not our topic. So Thursday night, we'll try to explore it. The Gemara says, Hashem says, I want to give them Shabbos, and the Gemara's conclusion is going to be that Moshe was tasked with telling them the great wages of Shabbos before they would get the gift of Shabbos. So Shabbos has much depth. Maybe we should understand this Gemara based on a thought that Rav Soloveitchik wrote. Rav Soloveitchik said that the initial thought was that the whole world would receive the Ten Commandments. And then they didn't live up to their end of the deal. They didn't keep the seven Noahide laws. They didn't get the Ten Commandments. Now, according to that, that means that the whole world would have gotten the mitzvah of Shabbos. If you think about it, the day of Shabbos really reflects creation. Why is it only the people of Israel that get Shabbos? The whole world was created in 6 days and God rested on the seventh day. Why should we alone have this day commemorating creation? Now, Shabbos really is a source of faith, as the Kuzari writes. You take a look at the whole world living a seven-day work week, you realize it reflects something. There's something doing here. Why is everyone living a seven-day work week? So the day of Shabbos that we rest, that's what we say, Zecher L'Maisev Reishis. The day of Shabbos is commemoration of creation that God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Now, this was, so to speak, in God's storage houses because it was really fit to be given to the world with creation. And yet Hashem held on to it and only gave it to us later when we left Egypt. So Hashem tells Moshe, go tell them the great wages. Mikan amar Ashbag, from here Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel taught, anoten pat letinok tzich lehodia imo. If you meet your friend, your neighbor's kid, and you give him some bread to eat, let his mother know. My Avide, what are you going to do? Go knocking on her door and tell her, hey, Miss Schwartzman, I just gave your son a piece of bread. Amar Abai shav lemishlacha umali lekuchla. So Abaye says, take some oil and put some oil in between his eyes and take a little bit of blue dye and put some blue dye by his eyes. And then he's going to come and his mother's going to ask him, why do you have that? And he's going to say, oh, I was by so-and-so. And he also gave me something to eat. He was dealing with oil and he put me this this dye which is good for the eyes. Kohl was something they would put by the eyes also for medicinal purposes. And oil, they would anoint themselves with oil also for medicinal purposes. So he also put some oil on me. He also put some of this blue dye next to my eyes. And he also gave me some bread to eat. And then the parents will know, ah, he must like us. He takes care of our kid when he comes by his house. And nowadays, the people are too superstitious. They'll think maybe he, what do they call it? He jinxed him. I don't know. Maybe he did something to him. Why is he putting oil in the middle of his, between his eyes and some blue stuff next to his eye? Must be he did something to him. Rav Papa says, rub some crumbs of what you gave him on him so that when he comes home, his mom will see the crumbs and she'll ask him, hey, why do you have crumbs on you? And he'll tell her where it came from. You give him a bar of chocolate, wipe some chocolate on his cheek. He'll come home, his mom will ask him, hey, where'd you get chocolate from? Say, there are other Gemaros that discuss not giving children something to eat their parents wouldn't approve of. That's a different concept. Here the assumption is the kid's hungry and you're giving him something to eat and you know the parents wouldn't mind. So that's this concept, that when you're giving someone something that wouldn't embarrass them, that's a favor to them, and if they'd know you gave it to them, they'd like you better for it. So then tell them. Sometimes we do a favor for someone and we figure, why should I tell him? And the answer is that if he knows you did something good for him, he'll like you better. So now we're not talking about charity. When it comes to charity, it's good to keep it quiet. The guy would be embarrassed if he knew who gave him what. But if you're doing something positive, so then that promotes friendship. People have appreciation for one another.
Isn't charity positive?
Charity is positive, but the recipient is embarrassed.
Oh, okay.
So it's in his interest not to know. And it's a bigger mitzvah if he doesn't know who gave him the charity. It's a bigger mitzvah for the giver, and it's a better feeling for the recipient. But when it comes to a gift, so then a person does want to know who gave it to him. I did a circumcision for someone half a year ago. Oh, it's almost a year already. So he came by and dropped off a box. I usually don't charge anything for circumcision. What?
It's pretty good at the half year.
I didn't expect anything. Now, I initially didn't know who it was from. So someone leaves you a box with a gift. You walk in and you see a box with a gift. And the guy who gave me, I say, where'd this come from? He said, I don't know. A guy walked in here, said, I should give you this box. So you look in the box and you see there's a gift. And you say, okay, who gave it? You feel bad. Yeah, you feel uncomfortable. But if you know who it is, okay. So you say, okay, now I understand what's going on. That's what the Gemara is saying. When it comes to a gift, the person wouldn't be embarrassed to receive it. So you tell them, you should say who gave it. And this is something which people sometimes are unaware of. There are little things. Sometimes you give a recommendation. Sometimes you do something small to help a friend. And it promotes the friendship if only he knows. So the Gemara asks, Ini? You see those letters? Aleph, Yud, Nun, Yud. Ini? Is this really so? Ve'amar mar, like in, yes, he. Yes, this? That's the in, he? Is this so? Ve'amar Rav Chama bar Chanina. But Rav Chama bar Chanina taught, Hanoten matana l'chaviro. One who gives a gift to his friend, in tzarich lo'odo, he doesn't have to tell him you're giving the gift. Shneimar, because the verse says, Moshe lo yada ki karano panav daberu ito. It says that Moshe came off the mountain, and he didn't realize that his face was shining. He didn't realize that the skin of his face was so radiant that people couldn't look him in the face. He didn't realize. So God gave him this gift, and he doesn't realize he received the gift. So you see that you don't have to tell the person when you're giving him a gift. Answers the Gemara, lo kasha, that's not difficult. Ha, b'milata David elagluye. That which you don't have to tell your friend you gave him a gift, that's when he'll figure it out on his own. And when do we say you should tell him? That's when he won't find out on his own. So the Gemara says, what kind of answer did you give me? God tells Moshe, go tell him I'm giving them a good gift, the Shabbos. Well, they were about to find out they were getting a good gift called Shabbos. Why did Moshe have to introduce it? Answers the Gemara, Matan Schara lo avid legluyei. They wouldn't have realized the wages of Shabbos. That's what Moshe was coming to tell them. Listen here, there are tremendous wages for the keeping of Shabbos. The fact that it's a gift, everyone knows, you come to Shabbos, it's one of the greatest things of Judaism. You have a day off, a day with the family, a day of rest, a day to enjoy. So everyone realizes you got something good, but that you're still going to get wages for keeping Shabbos. That's a secret. You might think Shabbos is what you have over here. So that's what Moshe was commissioned with doing. Go and tell the people that there are great wages for keeping Shabbos. Did someone want something?
I was saying that maybe they wouldn't have realized it was a gift at first. Like, there's a tendency, like, for some people to view, like, a lot of things in Judaism as, like, a list of you can'ts, or you shouldn'ts, or thou shalt not. No one talks about, like, good side. Like, if I came up to you and I gave you, you know, like, a list of rules, and I said, well, you can't do this, and you can't do this, and you can't do this, you would come out with, like, a lot, like, worse tasting mouth than if I said, you know, this rule is beneficial to you because it'll give you this, and this rule is beneficial to you because it'll give you this and this, you know? I think it's a lot better. So people, like, maybe wouldn't have realized on their own that Shabbos is, like, a gift unless someone said, look, this is actually what it is. It's not, you know, like, oh, here's another restriction for you guys. It's a day of rest.
I hear. You're a fan. I hear. Rav Chisda. Who is Rav Chisda? Amora, the father-in-law of Rava. He was a Kohen.
He was the father-in-law of Rava.
Correct. His daughter was Rava's wife. So Rav Chisda, havenakat biyadei. He was holding in his hands, talte matnita de Torah. Two gifts of an ox. So, we know that we give a Kohen Zroa lechayim and keva. Whenever we slaughter an animal, so we're supposed to give the kohen part of the cheek, one of the arms, and a part of the digestive tract. So the kohen, once he receives it, it's his. He could do whatever he wants with it. Now, Rav Chisda lived in Chutzlartz. And the question is, Rav Chisda lived after the destruction of the temple, and today, no one gives any part of the animal to the kohen. So, why don't we give any part of the animal to the kohen? So Rashi says, it says in Tractate Brachos, that today we rule like Rabbi Eloi, that you only give the gift of the first shearing, meaning another gift you're supposed to give the kohen, is the first time you shear an animal. You give some of that wool to the Kohen. So that only is applicable in the land of Israel. Technically, it's not something that grows from the ground. It's from the animal. Why should it be contingent on the land? That's what Rabbi Eloi holds, that Reishis Hagez is only applicable in the land of Israel. So Rashi says, you know what? It's not only the first shearing. It's also this gift of those parts of the animals. So Rashi's troubled. Wait a second. Here you see, Rav Chisda lived in Chutzlartz after the destruction of the temple, and they were still giving him these gifts. So that should contradict Rashi's whole position. Rashi's saying, just like you don't give the first shearing in Chutzlartz, so too you shouldn't give those parts of the animal to the kohen in Chutzlartz. Well, wait a second, then why is Rav Chisda receiving the Reishis, the Zroa Lechayayim and Keva? So Rashi wants to say that the custom only evolved later. Today, that's the custom, and we don't change. But it evolved later. So that's a huge chiddush, what Rashi's saying. And according to Rashi, we have to ask today, anytime we slaughter an animal, shouldn't we give the Zroa Lechayayim and Keva? According to, if we're going with Rashi, that the whole reason that Israel stopped giving these gifts to Kohanim was because the Jews were in Chutzlartz. And the only reason Rav Chisda and Chutzarts was still getting these gifts of Kohanim was because the custom wasn't yet accepted. Okay, now we're back. So we should give these gifts to the Kohen. Anytime you slaughter an animal, you should give him Zra Lechayim and Keva. And anytime you shear your animal, you should give him the first shearing, Reishis Hagez. So according to Rashi, that's true. According to this Rashi over here in this Gemara, today, anytime you slaughter an animal, you should again give these gifts to Kohanim. One might say, who said that they're bona fide Kohanim? There's a story, one of the Gaonim arranged a huge Berchas Kohanim opposite the Temple Mount. There are sources, it says in the Tosefta, in Moed Katan, if I'm not mistaken, that if one lost an item, then he should, on Rosh Chodesh, go around the gates of the temple and say psalms as he goes around the gates, and that's an amulet for finding it again. So today, they reinstated that. They have every Rosh Chodesh, what they call Sivuv Sharim. They go around the gates and they say psalms. So this concept of going around the gates and saying psalms is a very interesting concept. It already shows up in the Tosefta. And the idea of going around and saying psalms is really an idea that appears in the Mishnah. It says if you want to give holiness to the city, how did Jerusalem get its holiness? They walked around Jerusalem and said psalms. And then the Gemara says, I don't know how to explain this, but this is what it says, that those psalms made sure that no bad spirits could enter Jerusalem. Jerusalem is free of any kind of bad spirits, and that's the sanctity that they gave the wall as they walked around. So they had a whole procession. They didn't just say psalms. They had sacrifices with the psalms. They had a priest with the psalms. There was a whole procession of how to do it. But you see, this idea of saying psalms as you go around the walls has some kind of spiritual effect. So, coming back to our story. So, one of the Gaonim arranged on Rosh Chodesh to have a massive Birkas Kohanim. He had a mountaintop filled with Kohanim. And they're all making the blessing of Birkas Kohanim. And he was told by Elio, if I'm not mistaken, the way the story goes, he was told by Elio that if they'd have this big Birkas Kohanim, then they could bring a great redemption to Israel. So then Elio shows up, and he asks Elio, nope, how'd we do? So Elio says, well, that whole mountaintop filled with Kohanim? You see that coin over there that looks like a beggar, no one's thinking of him? He's the only bona fide Kohen in the bunch. All the rest, you think they're Kohanim, they're not really Kohanim. So that's a scary source. He said that the Kohanim are not true Kohanim. How do we go with that? So when they started talking about coming back to Zion, so one of the disciples of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, named Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, he wrote a book called Drishat Zion, in which he discusses how could we come back to Israel? How could we rebuild the temple? So he starts analyzing all kinds of halachic issues. One of the issues he discusses is do we accept the Kohanim as bona fide Kohanim? There's another issue which was raised 400 years ago, that there were so many pogroms that most of the Kohanim's daughters were raped, that can you say that the Kohanim kept their true lineage? So that was already addressed earlier, that yes, we don't assume that Kohanim all came from some Kazakh. You say, if it happened once, it happened twice, but most of the kids are still okay, and that doesn't disqualify the Kohanim. But what he writes there is that even for biblical mitzvos, we consider the Kohanim to be bona fide Kohanim. That's what he writes. This is a question. If a Kohen today chooses to marry a divorcee, so the halacha says we force him to get divorced. You're not allowed to marry a divorcee. Every day you're living with her is in sin. We once had a Kohen here who said to me, I'm willing to forgo my kahuna. Just for her, I'm willing to forgo my kahuna. No such thing. It doesn't work. You can't do that. Every day is in sin. The courts wouldn't allow it. But that's assuming that he's a bona fide Kohen. So we do assume he's a bona fide Kohen. That's what Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer writes there. And he sent it to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. If I remember correctly, Rabbi Akiva Eiger approved the book. He writes, he went over the book and he agrees. He gave him a skama. So that's the strong opinion of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, which is also attributed to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that Kohanim today are bona fide Kohanim. So that only strengthens the question. Maybe we should still be giving them the Matnos Kehuna. We should still give them the gifts that we give Kohanim. Why don't we do that? And this is a big question, because you don't have to be pure to eat the Zro'a Lechayim and Keva. A person any coin, just like we see here. Once the coin receives it, he could even give it to Yisrael. He could give it to whoever he wants. He doesn't have to eat it in purity. Give us just 1 minute. So Rav Chisda was carrying these two gifts, and he said, Amar, Kolman da'ati v'amali, whoever comes and tells me, Shmait da'chadita, a new quote, Mishmei de'rav, in the name of Rav, Yahiv nalu niale, I'll give him these two pieces of meat. He had these two chunks of meat, and he said, whoever can give me a new quote in the name of Rav is getting this meat. So that he's allowed to give away the meat. He wanted new Torah. He said, if you could tell me a quote from Rav I didn't know earlier, you're getting these two chunks of meat. Amale Rava Bar Machsia, so in walks Rava Bar Machsia, that's the one we've been quoting until now. Hachi Amalav, this is what Rav taught, the quote we just learned. Hanaten matana lechaviro, tzich lo'odio. If you're giving a gift to your friend, let him know. Shnemar ladat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. As the verse says, I want them to know, God says, that I'm the one that gives them holiness. So he tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people I'm giving them holiness. So that's the quote he gave. Rav taught, if you're going to give a good gift to your friend, if it's not charity, if it's a gift, so let him know you're giving it to him. So he gave him the meat. Okay, he won, he got the meat. Amar, Sarava Bar Machsia said to Rav Chisda, Chavivin alecha shmaita de Rav kuli hai. You like the quotes from Rav so much, you offer free meat to whoever will give you a quote from Rav. Amalein, so Rav Chisda said, yes, I do like the quotes from Rav that much. Amalei, so Rav Bar Machsia said to him, Hainu dama Rav. He said, okay, Rav had a saying about people like you, Milta alvishayu yakira. So I would read this one way, Rashi reads it another way. Rashi reads it, whoever is used to wearing a nice coat, to him the coat is very precious. When you're used to something, then it's very precious. So you're always used to learning the quotes of Rav, that's why they're so precious to you. Now, I would say that the word milta is not a coat. Rashi says milta is a me'il, a coat. But really, in Talmud, we have something called meilat, and meilat is fine silk. So I always thought that pshat in the Gemara was meilta, fine silk, al vishayu, whoever's used to wearing fine silk, so then yakira, it's precious for him. If you're not used to fine silk, I remember I had a friend who had a coat that was made of cashmere. And you just touched that coat, and you felt like you wanted to wrap yourself up with that coat. So he was used to cashmere. You know, if you're used to cashmere, so then if you don't have your cashmere coat, you're missing something. I never walked around feeling I was missing anything because I never had a cashmere coat. But when you're used to some quality, so then it's worth more to you than someone who never had it. So that's what I thought was pshat in this. But Rashi doesn't learn that way. Amalei, Sir Rav Chisda said to Rav Bar Machsia, Amar Rav Achi, really, that's what Rav said. But right, that's an even better quote than the first one. And if I had another piece of meat, I would have given you that too. So that's our story here of Rav Bar Machsia. We're still going to continue with Rav Bar Machsia. And maybe next time we have to discuss why the second quote was more precious than the first quote. We'll see if we'll get to that. Tov.